FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's November 27th, 2018. Hey, be a part of the show. As always, email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, did you see the Black Friday riots this year? They become kind of humdrum. The amazing thing, it's spreading to other countries, the UK, Brazil, and other places that would really surprise you. And they don't even have Thanksgiving, so they have no excuse. All that quality time spent with your family is enough to make you go to the closest Best Buy or Walmarts and just participate in the riot. If that doesn't drive you crazy, what will? Hey, noted financial expert John Grace is with us again. John, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Kerry. Good to be with you.
Hey, as always, so what do you make of the black sales results so far? It seems kind of ridiculous to go through all that nonsense, all the social disorder, if you're not even going to see any money hit your bottom line, right?
Well, that's absolutely true, although this looks like it's going to be a good Christmas season and maybe the last hurrah. Sales both online and in store are higher pretty dramatically compared to year over year just 12 months ago. So I think the good news is for the retailers and perhaps the stockholders, though that's a little bit hard to see for stockholders immediately. The other side of the equation, however, is that I think in one report I can see that 66 million Americans said in a poll that they were doing their shopping with credit, not cash. Mm-hmm. That could be the problem.
Could be a problem, hey? So we're getting too hyped up on credit yet again, more bubbles being blown, and at the same time, the Federal Reserve is raising rates and basically taking a what some might consider to be a deflationary stance towards the economy. Did they overshoot the mark yet or what?
Well, we will see. Only time will tell, right? Film at 11. But it seems like we're all in this together. And by that, I mean the consumers around the world, particularly here in the U.S., corporations with the collateralized loan obligations, something new, but listen to the first word, collateralized. That could be a problem.
I heard that somewhere.
And then governments. Yeah, we're all borrowing to unprecedented levels, higher than we were just 10 years ago by about $3 billion. It's a pretty wide margin. But so everybody's doing the same thing. It's put it on credit, and we'll I'm sure this will just turn out fine. Get all the credit you can use and use it all up.
Yeah. So it's going to be a Black Friday credit boom for now, but that could easily turn into a credit bust, especially
Correct.
If the economy takes a little dip. I mean, I don't want to drink the Kool-Aid and say this is just an amazing economy, the best economy ever, because I'm not buying it. But certainly unemployment claims have been at a near all-time lows. I don't know about true unemployment, because you know and I know that the U1 has evolved over the years and perhaps isn't the most representative, but all levels of unemployment, U1 through U6, have gone down. That's sounds like it's good on the surface, but isn't it really perhaps a contrary indicator that we're about to hit the peak and that things are going down from here?
Well, I'm saying prepare for that. I'm happy to be wrong, but I love Charles Barkley. I might be wrong, but I doubt it. So I'm saying, it's not about the prediction. It's all about the preparation. And when we look at the unemployment rate, when we look at the salaries that people are commanding, in many cases, it's not the same money as it was 10 years ago for those same people. And when we adjust for inflation, we see household income at an all-time high. What was it, $62,000, $63,000. But just to accommodate inflation over the last 10 years, you may have been at $57,000 in 08, 09, but today you need to be at $68,000, $67,000, almost $10,000 more just to keep pace with inflation. And so if they just at either of those numbers, a household, one, two, three, four, however it might be, how many people it might be, how good is life at $60,000, $62,000 a year? Not so good. So when we look at the real inflation, it's been higher than wages have gone up. Houses have been higher by almost a pretty significant increase, about 3% a year. Average income for the last 10 years, you know, starting 3-4 years in a row, actually went backwards after 08. Most people haven't seen that. Didn't get back to 57,000 until 2013. And of course, inflation has just kept marching on. So we don't have the same jobs. I think we're trying to fill in the gaps, the income gaps, with more credit to make life appear to be what it was in the good old days. And at some point, you know, if you miss one or two payments, this house of cards does come crashing down. And that's when the pain starts.
And it could be very, very painful. If the U.S. goes down, China's going down with it. China's been going down before. China's made a huge monetary U-turn and is priming the pumps with record amounts of credit. Look, China invented inflation here, John, and yet they seem to be all prepared to make the same mistakes over again.
Well, we all are. We're all standing in line. We're following the Japanese model. We're all trying to manage this thing without recognizing, first and foremost, Kerry, that it really boils down to demographics. And in America, we tend to get our first job around age 19. That's the statistical average. This is from the Census Bureau. We tend to peak at spending at age 51. Well, let's look at boomers. They are now, 1946, 64. So that means we're 54 to 72 years old, the baby boomers are. And then retirement still tends to happen at 63. So part of it needs to be a greater understanding that we're all in line. If China goes first, we're going to still be in line. But we're all in this together in terms of aging demographics. And once you peak at spending, and typically that's when the kids are out of high school and college, you're 51 or so, and then the need to buy what you used to have to buy just evaporates, and everything else becomes optional other than healthcare from that point on. So it's really made up news if we just say, well, we're going to make the economy grow 4 or 5%. I think David Stockman put it really well. He said in a conference, the Rational Economic Conference in Austin last month, if you think Donald Trump is going to make America great again, you have to believe in flying pigs.
Yes. Yeah, well, I don't remember the last time I saw a pig fly, but maybe I think I saw one of my kids' videos 30-something years ago. I was watching elephants fly, and they were no better at it probably than pigs. But look, so...
Well, yeah, you can go to Disneyland for that one maybe too, right?
The flying Dumbo ride. So it's crazy, but people get sucked in. The euphoria, and this isn't a euphoric kind of event either. Nobody is that happy about it, but they're all willing to go along with it, you know, in a kind of 300 million person reenactment of The Emperor Has No Clothes.
Yes, sir. Well said. Couldn't agree more.
So what do you do here? What do we do here? Because we like solutions. Problem has been very well illustrated. We all know it. But what do we do?
I'm suggesting that when it comes to investing, Kerry, that investors start by going back. They tend to like the people or the organizations they're doing business with. And I'm saying, go back to them and ask them to show you. What did Reagan get famous for? Trust but verify. Mm-hmm. These people are nice people. They're educated. They're polite. They won't smell bad at your kid's wedding. But ask them to show you, first and foremost, how bad did it get in 08? I want to see the data. Don't tell me I'm back to even. I already know that. Let's show me what I did not see. How bad did my losses happen? Okay. And then number two is, what have you done? Show me, don't tell me, what are we doing to keep those losses from happening again in the event the market looks like the Titanic again and finds an iceberg in the middle of nowhere? And then, you know, the people on the Titanic, I don't want to move the deck chairs on the Titanic. I want my money in safe positions as it's going down so that I can survive to tell this story. That's what I really want. So if we don't learn, how's it go? If you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. If we don't learn from how bad it got in 08, how are we going to be any better prepared if another 08 is in the cards and there's no way to avoid it? So I'd certainly like to see people figure out how to keep from getting scalped.
Yeah. Well, right now we have to go to a message from one of our sponsors. But John, think about it. What would you tell Joe Sixpack to do in this situation?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Blinkist is the only app that takes thousands of the best-selling nonfiction books. It distills them down to their most impactful elements so you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes. All on your phone. With Blinkist, you will expand your knowledge. You'll learn more in just 15 minutes than you can in almost any other way. Plus, you can listen to it anywhere you like. I've gotten Blinkist. You should definitely get it too. Look, I like to listen to Blinkist while I'm driving off to an undisclosed coffee shop for my morning shot of Java. The Blinkist library is massive, from timeless classics like War of the Worlds to current Amazon bestsellers all over the place. You just can't find a better source of books and information out there. You know, my personal favorite is The Silk Roads by Peter Frankopan, and it's titled A New History of the World. It's just an 18-minute read. Amazing book. I know you'll like it. And the best part is that Blinkist is constantly curating and adding new titles from best of lists, so you're always getting the most powerful ideas in a made-for-mobile format. It really is amazing. You know, there's over 5 million people using Blinkist now to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time. You should get started today. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for you FSN community members. Go to Blinkist, that's blinkist.com/FSN, and start your free 7-day trial today. That's Blinkist, blinkist.com/FSN. Get started today on your free 7-day trial. You can cancel anytime. Again, blinkist.com/FSN.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
And we are back with our good friend, John Grace. John, what does Joe Sixpack do?
Well, first, let's go back and see what you did. And then next question is, what kind of loss can you accept? That's a question most investors have not been asked and have not answered. So when we were working with one couple, they're from Hawaii, and we're working online with them because it doesn't matter where they are. We asked them the question, or there's 5 or 6 different questions that are on our site so that people can kind of identify what kind of loss can I accept. That's a couple kind of a thing. So it's a discussion. You know, this whole notion, you're moderate, you're aggressive, you're conservative. I don't know what any of those terms mean, but they certainly aren't terms that both parties understand. So let's put the language in a format that both parties can understand. These folks went through the, you know, questions, came to the conclusion they could live with a 20% loss. I'm okay with that because that means we need 25%, as you know, to get back to even. That might happen. And then we ran their portfolio backwards to see how severe the losses were from 1/1/08 through September 30, 2018. We're, of course, assuming that the positions were exactly the same then as now, or now as then. So the same positions on 1/1/08 are still in the portfolio as of September 30th, 2018. And they were astonished to find that their loss was 42%. Now, that's not uncommon, but their first aha was, geez, that's twice as bad as we were willing to accept. And we don't know that anything has been done to keep this from happening again. So then we put up another portfolio, a real one. This isn't hypothetical. This is our back-tested numbers. And we see that if we had designed the portfolio where it could take advantage of active management strategies. And I simply try to refer that in a way of, you know, think of it as risk on, risk off. So in 08, we wanted out of risk assets, be they bonds or stocks, going to cash or alternatives to keep the losses at 20% or less, and then back in risk assets starting March 9th or so, 2009, to enjoy all of those gains. So they saw, instead of being off 42% in their portfolio, the proposed portfolio was up about 17%. Now, that's a good feeling because they can live with 20. going down even less than that is that's acceptable. And then in the current portfolio, they were also surprised to see in this robust market, it took about 4 years for their account to get back to even. In the proposed portfolio where these active management strategies are in place that kick in automatically, it took about 2 years for that account to get back to even. That gives them some capability of seeing that we're better prepared for the next time, no matter when that iceberg appears.
Hmm. Interesting. So if they're worrying about losing, aren't they better off just getting out now?
Well, see, my answer is not yet. I think the better question is to define what loss you can live with. For some folks, it might be 50%. Now we need 100%. I don't like those odds. For some people, it might be 10. But here's the whole thing. If the portfolio performs within your expectations, you already know in advance that the portfolio is going to be defensive when it needs to be as markets are declining, because we don't want to miss the upside. If there's some gains, we need all of those gains, particularly if we're taking withdrawals and we're paying taxes and we're paying fees. So we need the gains, but we want to minimize. How's it go? Savvy investors hate losses more than they love gains. Mm-hmm. So if we can limit the losses to a range that you think is manageable and the portfolio performs within that range, like I say, if it's as bad as 20, we need 25. That might happen. If we're off 60, as some accounts were after withdrawals and market decline at 08, 09, well, that means what? We need 150% to get back to even? That might never happen. Never is a long time.
Yeah.
So I think the better question is to answer is define the loss you can live with, design the portfolio that might perform within those parameters, and then you're probably better off at being able to tell the story as opposed to being in the news.
Here's the thing, though. Besides just what loss you can afford, is you have to look at what your potential gain is going to be. And I know that stocks climb on a wall of worry, and we certainly have, we got a wall that's that would definitely be appropriate for the southern border of the United States right now, wall of worry for sure. But look, there's an inevitability to this thing, right? There really is an inevitability to it. So do we just wait around and wait for it and just hang out and let the tsunami come hit us? Although we'll survive, but everyone else on the beach is going to be dead. Or do we just decide to get off the beach and go for safer high ground, whatever that might be?
Well, let me say two things. That might be a good solution. And using your analogy, I love that house left standing in Mexico Beach. But let's understand, these folks, they came in with the architect asking a really tough question. Design this damn house so that it can withstand 250 mile per hour winds. Really? So that means we need to dig deep, like 40 feet. Mm-hmm. We need to have concrete walls. I mean, they put a lot of time and attention in the question without knowing the answer. And lo and behold, we see that it's one of very few houses that are left standing. To me, that's an example of, geez, if we really ask the tough questions, we hire the really bright people, we might have a chance here. So I like the idea of limiting the losses. You can go to cash. It might be premature. What typically happens is people might get the sell or the buy correct, but they typically don't get both correct. And if you've only got one side of the trade correct, that would be 50% correct, which is typically an F on every test that I took. So I want to get both sides correct as well as I possibly can. Limit the losses and enjoy the gains, because now we're back in risk assets when the market's has turned around. The second part, Carrie, is to diversify unlike anything you've ever done. We all know that most investors have been encouraged to put their life savings outside of the house, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, some ratio like that. Okay. And both of the, in an 08 and then before that, an 02, that kind of portfolio got hit pretty hard. So when we look at the foundations and the endowments, Yale would be a primary example because they do a report once a year. We see that their exposure to corporate bonds is only 4%. To stocks, U.S. stocks, it's only 5%. To internationals, it's 15%. So that means what? They've got roughly 24%, the way most of us have 100%. They've got 8 asset classes. So what I'm saying to folks is let's have some positions that may surprise to the upside, whether it's currencies or commodities or business development corporation, real estate investment trust, particularly healthcare, real estate investment trust, private equity. Now we may find that something goes up to offset the declines elsewhere. So we've got a smoother ride, a little more consistency in the investing experience.
All right. So I appreciate what you're saying, but what about the concept of A, covered calls, options, which if you're not familiar with covered calls, basically it allows you to sell an option for somebody to buy your stock if it hits a certain level, and you get paid what's called the premium income on it. And what about using right. options to protect you somewhat on the downside?
That can work. That can work. It's a personal plan. I mean, if you look at Mark Cuban, right? He's busy, but $6.5 billion, right? He wants mm-hmm. to protect his net worth. And he said back just before the election and again in February when we saw this kind of negative volatility, he said publicly, I'm 100% hedged. So I don't know that there's the right answer. This certainly isn't a prescription. Everybody should do this, that, or the other. But certainly if we don't ask the questions and find a roadmap that we think might serve us, then we are left in the dark to let things happen. And then it's an OS moment or more like shock and awe, right? Yeah. It just doesn't feel good. And mm-hmm. so many folks may not have enough time to recover, assuming there is a recovery period.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, especially that depends upon your age, and that your age should determine the amount of risk that you're willing to take. A lot of you out there don't understand the risk that you are exposed to. And we all have to be risk managers, every one of us. You need to know what your risk is, what your exposure is. And that's what I like what you're doing, John, is really running through these hypotheticals. Look, Mike Tyson said it best, a plan works till you get hit in the head. But
right.
It only works until you get hit in the head. But after the drowsiness, the grogginess, the near unconsciousness clears, you still got the plan, and it's better to have a plan than to not have a plan. So a risk management assessment is really what it's about. So what sectors of the stock market in particular do you think will be less susceptible to risk?
Well, when you say risk, you're of course talking about which ones would be might be less susceptible to declines, right?
Major declines, or might even appreciate somewhat as a result.
Yeah, that to me is a hard one. You've really got to have, I think, a trading platform working for you where you're in and out very short term. To maybe pick up some gains. That's the only thing I've seen working. We see, for example, that typically when all stocks get painted with the same brush, so when the market goes down, all the stocks go down, some a lot more than some other ones. The tech tends to feel some of that, maybe a lot of that. Some of the things that held up in 08 were healthcare. The decline was less. The rebound was faster. That's the healthcare, whether it's companies or healthcare real estate, whether it's liquid. Some positions are illiquid. They both have pros and cons. But healthcare, because 10,000 people a day are turning 65, and most of that money is coming from the U.S. government in terms of paying all of those providers and the drugs that you never thought you'd need. Now yeah. you can't live without. So I think healthcare will hold up probably better than most. Looking at the stocks from the standpoint of which ones have dividends that are consistently paying at the rate of 3 or 4%, that's nice to see, because if we're taking withdrawals at 3 or 4% and the portfolio is producing an income at the same rate, well, we're not so worried about the corpus being damaged if the income remains the same. And now we have time, because we didn't have to sell the shares, hopefully, to allow those share prices to come back and get to the levels where we see some gains and where we might be able to make some money.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I totally am with you there, and can see the wisdom of this type of approach for sure. So dividend aristocrats, because you've got different types of investors buying dividend stocks, right? Then you're run of the mill.
Yes.
So they'll still get hit.
You know, right.
I'm thinking of the top dividend yielding companies. They still went down in 08, but they went down far less than other shares. But there was one problem with that theory in 08. The really high rating, high yielding master limited partnerships, otherwise known as MLPs, they were just slaughtered because, as it turned out, a right. lot of hedge funds owned them, and they were super levered, and they just immediately disposed of those stocks because they were super liquid. They went down 50-60%, some of them. The amazing thing, though, John, was that they came back extremely fast, because as rates went down, the rates on these, the distribution rates, were extremely high compared to the rest of the market, and you had some mm-hmm. incredible returns. I can say I managed to capture a couple of them. I wish I knew how I was so smart to do it, but I haven't been that smart since. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's okay to be take luck over being good, right?
Absolutely. I'd much rather be lucky than smart.
Every time. Yes.
Always rather be lucky than smart. So for
absolutely.
Sure.
And one of the things that a lot of people didn't see, and we kind of study these things to find out what did well in 08, and the surprise, a couple of areas that we saw were market futures, some of our liquid, some real liquid again, but that had combinations of currencies and commodities. Some of those performed very, very handsomely in 2008. So that's one of the reasons why I say greater diversification, because no one saw that coming. But if an account was up after expenses about 27-28% in a very bad year, that helps you feel good about at least one piece of your portfolio that helped offset the declines in the house and the bonds and certainly the crushing in stocks. So that's why I say the greater diversification, because you don't know both sides of the equation, right? Which ones are going to mm-hmm. disappoint you? You might see that one come a little bit, but you also don't see what could surprise you. You just have to have your chips on the board before the dice are rolled. Otherwise, you're trying to catch falling knives and you missed the gains that you could have had.
Yeah, we know about falling knives. It's not a pleasant sensation to catch that thing. But yet, it's what we have to deal with as investors. John, it's really been an interesting conversation. I'd like you to tell all of our FSN members where they find you, where they can connect with you on the web.
Sure. Why be poor? That's three words all spelled out. Why, poor, POOR.com. And in fact, Carrie, if folks go there, they can look at the right hand corner. There's we call it our riskometer, right? And they can click that. There's two parts to that little area. One, I give a commentary every 30 days about the good and the bad in terms of the stock market in two paragraphs. Mm-hmm. And then the next piece is a chance for you to determine what your risk. What risk are you willing to accept? So what's your risk number? They can fill that out. They can go through the five or six questions, and really in real time, this is an advantage technology, right? They can see for themselves, okay, let's look to the left. How bad could it get? Let's look to the right. How good could it get? What's the number we can live with? And you can always change your mind, but at least it helps you see for the first time, I suspect, what kind of loss you find acceptable.
Yeah, and I find that extremely, extremely helpful for sure. I don't think there's anything else out there like it. So we're thrilled that you're sharing it with our FSN members. And if they have any questions, is it possible for them to give you a call?
Oh, by all means, 805-495-2077.
Yeah, that's really gracious of you to share that with us. And just don't go over your whole portfolio with John, and take 2 hours of his time. He's happy to talk to you, but be respectful of his time as well. But I think you can benefit a lot from the riskometer, and everybody, all of you should run that portfolio through and see what your tolerance for risk really is. John, it's been great speaking with you. Hey, by the way, send John an email, care of me, KL@KerryLutz.com, Twitter feed @KerryLutz, and the Facebook page Financial Survival Network. Hey, don't forget, if you're watching us through YouTube, why don't you subscribe, share, and like us? Really appreciate it. And if you're listening anywhere, share us with a friend that you think might find the show beneficial and interesting. Hey, we love getting your emails. We love getting new guests on, and as well as having the standard old guests on. So, John, we will talk to you again real soon. Thanks so much.
Look forward to it, Kerry. Thanks so much.
All right. You take care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.